Putting the Scat in Eschatology. It's the Drew Marshall Show.
Well, this next guest has been on our show before. Hopefully he will come on again. And he's a very, very gracious man. Let me just tell you a little Max Lucado story.
I'm ready.
This one time?
Yep.
At band camp? I was sitting beside him at a lunch table.
Did you know it was him?
I kind of did, but I didn't.
He had makeup on, did he?
So he had makeup on. This guy sat down beside me, and they're introducing the speaker, Max Lucado.
Okay.
And they're going on and on and on about this guy. He's like, oh my goodness, give me a break. So I'm rolling my eyes at this guy beside me, you know. And then I offer him some chips because I'm bored of this introduction. I've got a little bag of potato chips with me.
You just conveniently had a bag of chips?
Well, because it was lunch. I forgot to mention that. It was lunch. So we go, oh, yeah. So he takes some chips, and he really liked it, and he wanted more. And I said, no. Ladies and gentlemen, on the Drew Marshall Show, Max Lucado. How you doing?
I'm good. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, I hear you really like all-dressed chips.
I'll eat any kinds of chips.
Max, I have you up in a pedestal, right? So don't tell me that you're a junk food fiend, okay?
You know, I love junk food. And I got to tell you, I'm a recent convert to Timmy's.
No, that is wrong. No, that's horrible.
Right.
Seriously, that is horrible coffee.
I am, and I feel like I've been in outer space because, I know a lot of your audience will find this hard to believe, but I just was unaware of Timmy's until recently, and my last trip to Canada just made so much better because I discovered it.
I know you're sucking up, but can you give me a little truth? Because Tim Horton's coffee compared to Starbucks, really? You're going to put Tim's over Starbucks?
Okay, I like it, and I was even coached into how to order, but I'm afraid I'm going to mess this up.
Okay,
it's been a couple of months since I was there, but
let's hear it.
They said just order a regular.
Yeah,
and that meant I would get cream. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Am I messing this up?
No, you get cream and sugar in a regular, don't you, Tim?
Okay, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
cream.
It.
Yeah,
but I wanted, and so they said, oh, don't say you ask for cream and sugar. Just this is my host.
Yeah,
then just ask for a regular.
Yeah,
and I was so happy, and I got a donut with it.
Well, I'm surprised that Canadians aren't way bigger than we are, because most Canadians order what's called a double-double, which is two sugars and two creams, and a donut. So that's ridiculous right there. Anyway.
Well, I'll tell you, maybe that explains why you're not nearly as cranky as some of us are.
Well, I'm not sure. Max, every time you go to a speaking gig, from what I hear, you start off with some kind of corny joke. Because that's what I heard you do at the thing here in Toronto. What?
My messages kind of peek out after the joke.
Can you lay one on us? Can you just do a little like? Don't take a long time with your joke because we got to talk about your book. But you got a little joke for us or something there, Max?
Well, that day we were together, I might have told you the one about the. Yeah, I have two jokes about people who get up in the middle of my messages and walk out.
Uh huh.
I don't think I told you this one.
Okay.
This guy got up right in the middle of one of my sermons at church and started walking out. And after the service was over, his wife came up to me and said, please don't be offended that my husband walked out of your message. He always walks when he sleeps.
Nice. Well done. Well done. I like that. Max Lucado, how many books have you written?
You know, this is my 30th, 29th. I've finished the 30th, but it's not published yet. Just finished it a couple of months ago.
How many times have you written about grace?
Every book, really.
Yeah.
In essence, but this is the second book that's devoted just to the topic of grace, and you know, such an encouraging topic, such a heart lifting topic that I think you could write easily a dozen in a lifetime and never exhaust it.
You know who I'd love to see write a book about grace? Mark Driscoll. or what's that guy's down at Masters College? What's his name? What's that guy? You know, Masters College, Max. Who is that? John MacArthur. I'd love to see him write a book about grace. Hasn't he?
I believe he has.
Yeah.
I believe he has.
But see, here's the thing. If you don't stink of it, you shouldn't write it. Mm-hmm. And you stink of grace. You really do.
Is that a compliment?
Yeah. You just reek of that stuff.
Well, God's been real kind to me, Drew. I mean, I believe that down. That's not just something I say. It down deep in my heart, I believe that he's looked upon me with favor and mercy. And so, it's just the best thing that's ever happened to me. Here's the deal about grace. You know, it's such a big word. It's such a big word that it's hard for us to get our hands around. And we all try to come up with a working definition. And mine is God's radical commitment to redeem and rescue a people for himself. And I think that's what grace is all about, that God is really redeeming a people with whom we're going to spend eternity with him. And this changes everything. I mean, it just changes the reason I'm on earth. It changes the reason, the way I view my problems. Most of all, it changes the way I view God. And if I don't understand that there is a God and I don't believe that God is a good God, that's going to make me live one kind of life.
Yeah.
But if I understand God's grace, and I believe he is there and he is good, that's going to put me on an entirely different path.
Okay, so I have a problem with grace. And it's not exercising grace with others. I'm okay with that. I mean, I'm a white, middle-aged white man that lives in North America. I don't get offended about much. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not everyone loves me. I get that, and I'm okay with that. I've lived most of my life as a bit of an iconoclast, so I'm used to that. But when it comes to God, the concept of God, like, there has to be a limit to grace, man. Seriously. You know, we compare God stuff with parenting stuff. And when I parent, sure, that the forgiveness is always there, but man, there's got to be some slam down boundaries, consequences. You're being too much of a bonehead. Stop sucking up to me and saying you're sorry. If you were sorry, you would stop it. You know, have you ever wanted to say that or actually said that to one of your kids? If you were really sorry, you would not do that anymore.
Oh, absolutely. I think the key, here's the difference, is that God has decided to change us through grace rather than change us through shame or through correction. There's plenty of correction and shame in the world, but God, everything that he brings into our life is couched in grace. And I think one of the most exciting discoveries about grace is that grace changes me more than laws change me. The best government in the world can only manage behavior, but grace has a way of changing my heart. In other words, it changes what I want to do. It makes me want to be more like God. It makes me want to do what is right.
But did you parent like that, though, Max? Did you sort of, were you a hippie parent? Were you sort of, you know, hey, whatever, man, you know, you just, if you want to burn the house down, that's fine, you know,
no.
I still love you, baby.
I got you. Okay, so grace, it's not to say that grace has no rules or no boundaries, but it is to say that the commitment of the relationship is greater than the rules and boundaries.
Well, that's well said.
Really, grace is very clear on rules and boundaries. You know, the Ten Commandments are really clear rules and boundaries, and the New Testament is even full of more specific rules and boundaries. But the covenant there is that God says, okay, I know you're going to break these, and I have made provision through the sacrifice of my son so that when you do fall, I'll be there to catch you. But he doesn't... You know, he doesn't mince words when it comes to what his expectations are of us, but he gives us the power within us to meet and to reach those expectations.
Max Lucado on the phone with us. By the way, how many years have you had to explain how to actually pronounce your last name?
Since the first time it was ever spoken.
Jeez.
But it's not a big deal. You know, if you say Lucado, that's okay. Just make sure you give me a Timmy's when you say it.
You are such a Canadian suck-up. Okay, listen, you know, there are those out there, you know, and I guess I'm still harping on the same issue, but just coming at it from a different angle here. There are those out there that say, come on, you know, there's a certain part of the Jesus tribe that are getting a little too gracey. You know, they're a little, and usually it's the Old Testament lovers that come in with this. Whoa, easy with the... puppy love and forgiveness and kumbaya incense crowd here. We need some boundaries, baby, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What's the number one pushback that you would give? Of course, it'd be all grace-filled, wouldn't it? Have you ever, by the way, sorry, I'm chasing a few rabbits here, but have you ever publicly gone off on somebody, ever?
Like a referee?
No, I mean some other, you know, God leader person.
You know, the thing about grace is that it causes us to, as we initially understand it, we're going to take advantage of it.
Yes.
That's to be expected. We're going to say, okay, God's going to forgive me for this, so I'm going to go out and do it. What we learn, though, is that as we understand and appreciate the price God paid for grace and the price he paid specifically in the life of his own son, it causes me not to want to sin. This was really the contention, I think, of Paul's gospel. In the book of Titus in chapter 2, he makes a clear statement that grace teaches us to do what is right. And that's a great thought. It teaches us to do what is right. It's kind of like as teenagers when we rebel, and then as young adults we see what our parents put up with. It teaches us, their love for us teaches us to respect them more. And I think as we grow in grace, that the grace that we used to take advantage of becomes the very thing that motivates us to want to do what's right.
But Max, we are different people. You know that. You've been alive long enough and you've pastored long enough to know that we are all wired very differently. And would you not say that there are some people out there that no matter what you say, no matter how you define grace, will take advantage of it, and they need a whooping upside the head, or they need some kind of electric fence around the rules?
One of the perfect examples, I think, of grace, to answer your question, you know, is this two contrasting stories of Paul and Peter and their different responses to grace. You know, Peter promised Jesus that he would never deny him, and then Jesus, knowing exactly what Peter would do, said, you're going to deny me, you know, three times this weekend, and yet I'm going to be waiting on you in Galilee after I come back from the dead. Well, there's a statement of grace. I know what you're going to do, but I'm going to be waiting on you. And he let Peter fall. He let Peter stumble. He let Peter go through the contrition and the remorse. And so grace doesn't prevent us from doing stupid things. It just catches us after we do. And Paul, on the other hand, was a fellow who held up the law in such respect that he actually said, whatever you brag about, I could brag about more. But as he came to understand the goodness of God, he actually said that everything I've ever accomplished is, you know, it's just a dirty rag. It's just filthy in comparison to God's commitment to me. And so here are two men, one a fisherman and one a very sophisticated theologian, who both were changed by God's grace, and both of them abandoned their own ability to try to impress God and simply lived in this beauty of trusting that God has made provision for us through his forgiveness.
Okay, so you're trying to get people to not just read about grace, but to allow it to permeate their souls in such a way that it creates a course change for them. Is that correct?
I love the way you said that. Yeah, the course change. Let it be amazing again. You know, the old hymn that we sing, Amazing Grace. And I think that for many people in churches, grace is just kind of a nice idea.
Yep.
But it's not a life-changing discovery.
Okay, I've all of a sudden realized that there are listeners who actually don't understand what grace is. You know, they might be listening to this going, really? We're talking about how to say a prayer before a meal? Oh, this is weird. Why are we talking about this? Like, what's the coolest description of grace, definition of grace you've ever heard?
Grace is God's passion for you and his willingness to live within you. It's the love that God has for you, but it's also the power within you. I think the Christian understanding of grace, Drew, is so unique from any other. Every religion banters about the word grace. Every one of them, every religion does. But no one goes as far as the Christian faith does, in that we say, hey, grace is God's commitment to die for us and then also his willingness to live inside us. You know, with all respect, the Muslim doesn't say Muhammad lives inside me, and the Hindu doesn't say Buddha lives inside me. But this is a Christian belief, and I think it's enough to cause secularists and Christians alike to shake their heads and say, now what in the world is that all about? Because this is really, it's just so stunning. You know, even the Apostle Paul said, people say I'm foolish for saying this. He said, people accuse me of being a fool, because it is just really an astounding thought. But if we trust it and believe it, I believe there's where people find the power. It's a mysterious power of God living inside of it.
Quite often when I'm at the pub, I don't let people know what I do, because it hijacks the conversation in some kind of weird, biased way. It was the same thing when I was a pastor. I didn't want to get into that discussion. I just wanted to develop friendships, over a pint, right? But ultimately, the conversation will always come around, and I don't initiate it, will always come around to God. God in the pub, remember when the Holy Spirit used to live at the Toronto Airport Christian Vineyard? That you remember, people would come from around the world to visit the Holy Spirit because it was here in Toronto. I think it's at the pub, because every time I'm there, somebody else brings up God, and the conversation always comes to, I've given up on church, I don't believe in religion, and then when I start talking about grace, they get it. They actually get it. Mm. I don't know if that makes any sense or not.
That'd be a great book for you to write, God in the Pub.
Yeah. Yeah, sponsored by Guinness.
Yeah.
Well, listen.
But, Drew, who doesn't want grace? I mean, down deep in our hearts, whatever we do, remember that great sentence, the man who knocks at the door of the brothel is actually knocking at the heart of God? Wasn't that George MacDonald, I think? I think everything we do that reaches out to, take care of our pain or give us pleasure, really what we're wanting is God. We're wanting to connect with our Creator. And grace says God wants to connect with us, too.
I'm mindful of the time. I just want to roll one quick thing by you, if you don't mind, Max.
Yes, sir.
I was waiting for him to go, no, I need to go, and I don't want to talk anymore.
And he called you sir.
And he called me sir.
Must be all that coffee.
It's the Tim Hortons affecting his brain. I think that what we do is when we willingly embrace bad stuff, whoever defines that, bad stuff in life, and we feel a little bit of guilt or whatever, we let that drive us away from God. And it's very much like the Israelites at the bottom of the mountain. And, Moses comes down he's found out that they've been doing every sin under the book imaginable. And he says something like, hey, you need to talk to God about all this. And they say, no, you talk to God for us, please. And Moses says, I'm paraphrasing this to death here. Moses says, no, let your sin cause you to go to God, not run away from him. If we don't understand grace, we will never, ever let our sin cause us to go to God. I think that's a crucial ingredient.
Great point. Because we all reach the bottom, don't we? At some point in our life.
I live there.
Yeah. And where is God when we're at the bottom? Well, if we don't know grace, we think God has abandoned us.
Right.
But if we understand grace, then no matter where we are, whether we hit the bottom in a pub or we hit the bottom in a very legalistic or self-righteous church, you can hit the bottom in both places. The only thing that will save us there is God's grace. And again, I'm not talking about just his nice, sweet. I'm talking about his aggressive commitment to redeem us. And to restore us into as he intended when he created us.
I've got so many more things to say in this, but to ask you in this, because it's a frustrating topic for me. I'm very frustrated by grace. Matter of fact, it angers me some days because it plays in my head. There's got to be a limit. There has to, I've got to. If I just went, I'm going to do whatever I want and then confess and then do whatever I want and confess, I might as well go to the local Catholic church, or I might as well be part of the Baha'i faith group and just get all wishy-washy. I should be a real Christian. And whenever I hear the phrase real Christian, I want to throw a hand grenade. Anyway.
There's many people who just say, hey, grace is too risky. It's too risky to be true. I think that's a risk that God's willing to take. I think the end result is that God wants to change us through his kindness instead of his sternness.
Yeah.
And I think it works. That's my contention.
Max, if anybody
if you disagree with me, you're wrong.
If anybody should be writing about grace, it's you. Because as I said off the top, you just stink of it. So thank you, Max.
Thank you, Drew. Thanks for the potato chips.
Yeah, no problem, man. No problem. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Max Licato on the Drew Marshall Show. He's one of the very few, Jesus leaders.
Yes.
That I actually care about.
Really?
Yeah. That was hard to get out of my...
I was just going to say.
I stuttered through that.
Wow.
I know.
Must be the grace that you have inside of you somewhere.
It must be. I like this song. This is a good song for this
topic.
Well,
I figured, yeah, there you go. See, I'm not too bad.
No, you're not too bad at all.
Call your mama about 3 or 4 nights ago.
I want to tell you, this is the first time I've ever listened to your show. It was just totally by accident. So pleased to hear the latter part of the show. The earlier part of the show, I guess, worried me.
Years ago, after 5 years of pastoring in Australia, Drew Marshall moved back to Canada and, with absolutely zero broadcasting experience, walked into the studios of Joy 1250 and pitched the idea of hosting a talk show that was different. Canada's most listened to spiritual talk show is now listened to by over 100,000 people around southern Ontario and thousands more by Canadians coast to coast. On September 15, 2012, the Drew Marshall Show will start season 10. And as a thank you for putting up with Drew for 10 years, we've decided to cut all advertising costs by 10%. Doesn't matter which plan you're interested in. 1250 specials, 10% off. One-day advertising package, 10% off. Our summer holiday special, 10% off. Or even our 15-week advertising package is now 10% off. To sign up for one of our 10-year anniversary advertising specials, contact us today at drewmarshall.ca.